What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Under the Helmet.
You do your thing, all right? Don't be nervous, okay?
The show that looks at long-term player value in fantasy football.
It's the moment right here. We're going to have to decide what type of team we want to be.
Building dynasties each and every week.
I don't even know your name. What's your name?
Chad Parsons.
I'm telling you, man, you're leading the league in hydration.
I got a dynasty team reaping rewards for the next decade.
Katie Flower.
You may beat me, but you will not outwork me.
Tim Torch.
There's only one winner, Chad.
Find their written and premium audio content at uthdynasty.com.
Playing it safe in Dynasty means you're going to lose.
Stop talking about it, man. Let's get this going right now.
Welcome to Under the Helmet. Looking at some long-term player value in fantasy football. Got Katie Flower here. I am Chad Parsons of uthdynasty.com. Week one is in the books, and we are full throttle. It's all about your teams, your lineups, making the best dynasty decisions possible. Would direct folks about an hour and a half show this week. Usually it's an hour 15 or so. UTH film notes, where I dive down in the middle of the night through every play of every game, distill it down to what you need to know first thing Monday morning. So that's one of the key features, in addition to a lot of other great content at uthdynasty.com. So I encourage folks to check that out as a premium subscriber. And Katie, I mean, how exciting, just in general, how exciting was week one? I mean, even if you take out the Monday night game, but just a number of new data points where everything is fresh. You might have ideas of what's going to happen, whether it's injuries or targets or opportunities, quarterback play. And week one is great because you can say it didn't mean anything if it didn't align with what you thought. You can say it means everything if it absolutely aligns with the things you've been saying for 8 months. But the point is, in a few weeks, we'll kind of find out what was true and what were false positives out of week one.
No, there was a lot to digest this weekend. It was exciting to have football back. It was
crowds back too.
Yeah. Well, and the crowds back. Yeah, it was just fantastic. Lot of injuries in week one, like a normal fantasy football week. A lot of unpredictable, some guys that we did not conceive achieved, and some guys that we thought, like Brandon Ayuk, for example, with the goose egg, in the doghouse. There were just a lot of different storylines, and depending on the crumbs that you followed, you may or may not have known to take them out of your lineup. Even like OBJ with the late minute scratch, like some people were expecting that, and I get it. And I looked on my fantasy league. They have this the S for starter and N for non-starter, and if you got them on your taxi squad or IR. But when one thing that I figured out with my fantasy league, if there's three or four different divisions, it only tells you the one. And so you could own the person and it still doesn't show up that you've got them as a starter. You can't necessarily go by that.
Yep.
Yeah. So
And this just brings up a point that you say all the time, which is if someone is iffy, if someone, you know, if you have someone, maybe it's a slight step down, you know, maybe it's a little bit, but the fact that it would reduce the risk of, hey, they re-aggravated something, they are just worse for the wear during a warm-up, a late thing where you might be scrambling. You may not see it 90 minutes before kickoff like it's posted. You may be doing stuff. And so you may see it 30 minutes before, 15 minutes before. You may hear about it on text or Twitter or GroupMe or whatever, that last minute change. I mean, we had a situation, right, with Josh Jacobs. I mean, so, yeah. or you might've had a situation with, say, Saquon Barkley, and you know, like, you don't know these situations, and you always say, whether it's privately to me or you've said it on shows before, that, man, if you want to reduce the risk, there's guys like OBJ was inherent risk this week, you know, and that's, you know, inactives, you know, we got some surprise inactives as well, like Trey Sermon and others that, you know, maybe you weren't expecting, but, you know, being open to a guy with an injury that, hey, they may scratch, they may downgrade, that is always a situation to say, what are my outs if it's a pinnacle game Sunday, Monday night? And then the other part would just be, do I have someone else where I don't really have to have that same level of worry and I can just fix it right here on Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, whenever I'm setting my initial lineup?
Right. So you and I, we co-own a couple different teams, but on one of them in particular, I remember the judgment call was between Saquon Barkley, who was playing this weekend, versus Josh Jacobs, who was questionable for Monday night. And you didn't think that he was questionable. You were ready to go with him, which is fine. But I didn't want to be stuck with him with no outs because I had heard that his toe was bothering him. And he also had a cold, which was not COVID related, but he had a cold. So I don't like to rely on Monday night guys if I don't have to. So you and I talked about it and we ended up with Corey Davis instead, which worked out perfectly because Saquon Barkley didn't do that much. Josh Jacobs did well, but Corey Davis did even better than both of them. Just having the discussion.
But the process was we had someone with no questions.
Right.
And frankly, if something had happened to Corey Davis, we could still pivot. You know, we can pivot to something later. And your point is an apt one that on Monday, the only pivot you might have had, like I had one matchup where I was down by two, Josh Jacobs was in my lineup. And you're like, well, 2 points. Well, you can envision a tweak and all of a sudden you don't get to 20 yards rushing. He's not a guy that catches five passes. Now, it turned out being fine. He got good enough volume. He scored twice. I mean, but apparently, you know, I didn't watch it live, but I mean, he was on the sideline changing shoes and limping and
yep.
was touch and go a little bit, you know, and frankly, early on. Now, he ended up being a big part, you know, of their win. But, you know, my other out was Sammy Watkins because, again, you're limited to one game. You know, you may not have a guy you want to drop, you know, that you can just pick somebody up that's just going to be playing if there is something that occurs. So I love what you said. A lot of times you get feature players and feature matchups Sunday, Monday night. But if that's your last guy, then you are threading the needle, you know, and really think this through that if they're questionable, if you've gone through the practice and notes, you know, for the week, and it's like, oh, this is not, you know, this is not ideal. Dropping down a little bit might be the prudent thing when you stack that decision up 5, 10, even 50 times across your leagues in the season.
Right. And as it turns out, either one of those plays, except for Saquon, either one of those plays, and we get the W. Anyway,
yeah. And it's not, and we were fortunate that we had Corey Davis and it was, you know, we had three options. Can you explain, I mean, did you have listeners and, you know, folks that follow me on Twitter and all that, did you ever hear from anybody kind of the logic that Saquon Barkley's start rate was so high? Is it because it's just Saquon Barkley and it's like, well, you press start when he's, you know, not completely injured and out. So that's what you do. Like his start rate was like 80%. And I had, like, I don't want any part of him. Like, I didn't want any part of him in my lineup because I was like, if he is a superhero, if he pulls an Adrian Peterson, I am going to be so happy that occurs on my bench and I would not be upset at all. Then like, oh, his star rate was high. I should have had him in my lineup over other quality options that I had leading into week one. It was so much risk. It pretty much happened, you know, occurred in the game how I thought, which is he's going to probably play a little more than you would like and he's not going to do a whole lot. He's not going to try to do a whole lot. So what's the point? What is really the point here? And you're just kind of rooting for him not to get hurt. I hope the first big game he has is on my bench because I'm being so conservative that even when it's like, oh, he's good to go. Well, show me. Show me you're good to go. And if you put up 30 on my bench and I lose by 26, so be it. I'm fine with that because he's one that has to prove it to me. And frankly, Brandon Ayuk, they slow played him. He was running these half routes during the game. And like looking back again, I had him in a few lineups, but it wasn't egregiously so. However, now he's at the point where you got to show it to me. You got to show it to me and that's okay. Blow up in week two, but if you're on my bench, that's okay by me. Just be healthy.
Yeah. No, I mean, week one is one of the toughest because we haven't seen the defenses and you've got projections for what the defenses are going to do. But the thing with the Giants and Saquon Barkley that I didn't have Saquon, I don't think I had him in any of my lineups, and I'm in 40 plus leagues. And the reason that I didn't have him in any of those lineups is because the Giants suck. And the game script is going to be for the wide receivers and the tight ends. And Evan Ingram was a late scratch. So you've got to pivot. You've got to go with the guys like Sterling Shepard and Kenny Golladay and the other wide receivers, because you know they're going to be playing from behind and Daniel Jones is going to have to air it out. Saquon Barkley is an afterthought in that game script. Plus, he's coming off an injury that was major. There was no way that I was going to start him in 99% of my lineups. But again, week one is the toughest to judge. But at some point, you got to say, prove it. Normally, it's play your studs. But in week one, especially coming off of something like that, it's not necessarily so.
Yeah, and frankly, as much as we talk about running backs and, you know, having extra bodies, you know, that you probably were okay. You know, I mean, that might have been pivoting to Damian Harris, you know, or somebody like that, where you may not think that that's super optimal, but he's a starting running back. He's going to see a pretty good snap share. And again, he's someone that can post. He can absolutely have the upside for a touchdown or two. So to pretend like you're probably starting nothing, you know, I mean, that could have been, you know, pivoting to someone that was running back 20. You know, in the projections or whatever, whatever resource. And this may align with two or three of the teams that we are going to discuss in this episode this week. But was there a running back rotation or situation, just a general across the NFL, that surprised you, that either, hey, this was an aberrational week one sort of thing, or this is something like, hey, I wasn't expecting it, but we're rolling with it. And I think this is going to be something that stabilizes. Could be usage, could be production, could be the level of offense actually improving a running back more than you thought.
Well, for example, Derrick Henry did not produce anywhere near what you would have expected him to produce. He made up for it in garbage time a little bit. He ended up with, like, depending on your scoring system, 10, 50 11 points. What's that?
He actually caught the ball. He actually had two, three, four catches, I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. No, the dude can catch. He's just not usually relied upon for that role. But the whole point is he started off really slow. He ended up doing okay, but 10 fantasy points, 11 fantasy points from Derrick Henry. When you expect 20 to 25, that's pretty sad. And it wasn't a bad matchup for the Titans. It was just,
well, it turned into a bad matchup. It turned into a nightmare.
Exactly.
Are you concerned about the Titans? No. I mean, are they? So this is going to be a false positive where they're going to be just fine. And
I think they're going to be just fine. I think this was just a week one. Again, week one is the toughest to call, not just for the studs, but I mean, even for the guys that are the non-studs trying to predict, okay, well, who of the backup dudes is going to be worthy of starting in my lineup. Like, I had faith. I started Tyson Williams in a bunch of different places. He's never touched an NFL ball during a regular snap. So that was a lot of faith put in him. And it turned out okay. But again, what else did they have? You got guys that are coming in off waivers. You got Latavius Murray, brand new to the team. Freshest legs that has played. There wasn't any surprise to me that it was Latavius Murray over Le'Veon Bell and Devonta Freeman. But, you know, at some point you got to gamble. You've got to roll the dice on a couple different guys.
How do you feel about Tyson Williams? You know, he got off to a good start. And it turned into more Latavius Murray in the second half. I mean, Williams did have that chunk touchdown, which really helped him. He had three catches, but only 9 carries, you know, in a game where they led a little bit. It was contested the whole way. It's not like there was comeback mode per se. Is that something that kind of you're like, you know, week one might be, you know, the most optimal period for Tyson Williams? Or do you think that, you know, that's just the way it worked out. They didn't want to overwork them in the first game, that type of stuff. What do you kind of take away from that?
No, I think that it's going to be him and Latavius splitting carries in the backfield for the foreseeable future. I don't think Le'Veon Bell's going to be anything. I think he's going to stay on the practice squad. A lot of people wanted to elevate him just because of the name, which I understand, but you have to look at Le'Veon Bell and his body of work recently. What have you done for me lately?
Is he a good fit too? I mean, he's not a guy that really hits it up in there quick, which with Baltimore, Lamar Jackson gets that hole open. You got to plug it up in there. Murray is more of a decisive downhill runner. Gus Edwards was exactly that, which was why he was a great fit. J.K. Dobbins has speed. I just wonder if, you know, if Freeman and Bell have the requisite speed or movement or burst at this point in their career to actually get through those, you know, or are they going to get plugged up after 2-3 yards and not really get through the second level?
I don't think they're going to get a shot. I think that, unless there's an injury, Tyson Williams and Latavius Murray will be the backfield. That's it.
Do you think Williams A didn't do enough, or Murray's role was enough, that this great cash out moment of Tyson Williams of like being able to maybe get a first, or like he didn't get the perfect storm enough in this game to really execute that plan unless maybe Murray gets hurt, you know, in the short term or something?
Well, I don't know too many people that are going to be doling out first for Tyson Williams.
Right.
Okay. Even after this week. But I think he's the kind of player, there's Ronnie Dangerfield type players that you would rather have on your team than have somebody else have them. I would not sell him for a second. I would not sell him for a third. I'd rather have him. If I bought him off waivers for whatever.
He's a 1A, 1B. So you have to. Right. So even if you view him as just a stock profile of a 1A, 1B guy, so wouldn't that be in the range of, let's say, Jamal Williams, you know, as someone that's, you know, they're going to split some snaps. They're both going to have their own role. Now, you know, PPR wise, I don't think the Ravens are in the class of Detroit in terms of the targets that are going to be available and some of those other factors. But like in terms of that, would you sell a stock, you know, committee guy getting 40%+ of snaps? Would you sell that profile alone? No name, you know, just for a random second. I think a lot of people, you would say no. But what I do find interesting is, could I move from Tyson Williams to another back like that and maybe get a second? Those are the types of deals that interest me in terms of playing the profile game of basically getting the same thing, yet Tyson Williams is hotter right now. But I do think Murray did enough that it really cools the stock a decent amount of where it might have been, you know, days before, you know, when we had the clarity, and heck, especially before Murray got there.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't go crazy about Tyson Williams or Elijah Mitchell or any of those types of players because they're not long-term dynasty plays. If you did get Tyson Williams off the waiver wire, I'm more apt to just run him into the ground, use him. He's more valuable to your team than even a second or a third.
Because the late second, let's imagine what that was this year. I mean, was that Amon-Ra St. Brown?
But you know, this Diami year's different from next year.
No, I know, but think of the type of player. You're probably looking at a day two tight end, a day three running back from that range. You typically don't get a look at a day two running back. It could be a first round quarterback, could be a day two wide receiver, but a running back that's in a 1A, 1B situation where, what if Murray gets hurt this next week? You know, how do things look then? Are you glad you sold for somebody's contender second? Probably not. You mentioned Elijah Mitchell. What do you think happens over the next, say, 2 to 3 weeks? How does this sift out with the 49ers now that we know Raheem Mostert out for the season, Wayne Gallman not on the team? They moved on from him weeks ago. So you've basically got Elijah Mitchell, who had the 100-yard game in his NFL debut. You've got Trey Sermon, who was inactive. You've got Jamichael Hasty as the most relevant pieces that remain.
One of the biggest scouting flaws, points that you and I both had about Trey Sermon was he is decent at a lot of things, but he's not great at any one thing. And I think that showed up this week in the non-start because he's not a special teamer. He's not a special team guy. But now that Raheem Mostert is out, I think that Trey Sermon will elevate to the RB1 position because he is a running back. He's not a special team guy. He's not. Elijah Mitchell can.
He's a returner, right? Yeah.
Right.
If he's offensive only and you're going to be in that three or four man rotation, if you're in a three running back rotation, I think they were probably thinking the calculus was Mostert not going to play special teams. He's our, running back one or 1A or whatever terminology they put on it. But if we have Sermon two, then we're going to lose a special teamer because Mitchell has to be up. So Hasty wouldn't be up. Like there really is a roster crunch for who is active. But now that Mostert not playing special teams is not a part of it, Sermon can be activated and he's not going to be a part of special teams. So the numbers are the same.
Right. So I think that Trey Sermon, a lot of people are thinking, well, Elijah Mitchell obviously is now the 1A. I don't believe that's true. I think that Trey Sermon is the 1A elevated because as a running back, he is a very talented running back. He doesn't do anything great, but he does a lot of things very good. And
that's all you need in Shanahan's offense, right? You
exactly.
need to do all the right things correctly. And because we wonder all the time about running backs, we're like, oh, this guy that's not playing as much, he's not as like he's way more talented. Yet they don't do the little things well. They like a lot of these coaches, they don't really. Oh, you run fast. Oh, that's great. Well, pick up that blitzing assignment. Don't fumble. And just basically when the hole's there, lower your shoulder, get the yards. Let's move on to the next play. Don't dance. Don't try to use your 4.3x speed and your great three cone and get the heck out to the perimeter because you might lose 5 yards. You're not following the play. Like, I think they hate that. So a lot of times these guys, Alfred Blue is a perfect example. He did a lot of things to a requisite level in the NFL. He played till he was like 29 or 30. A lot of times people wanted to run him out fantasy wise. And that's highly valuable. That's why they keep him around. And Sermon's better than that. But my point was that a lot of times these flashier athletic guys, they may not do everything well enough to actually get on the field. I think with Elijah Mitchell, I saw him, exploit a hole. I don't think he's great versus contact. I do have some questions about him. And if he's a core special teamer, I mean, I don't think their plan was to give him as much usage as he got in week one. Like, I think they would rather have him in that 1B role, so that he can do special teams because they might not have a replacement for him on that team.
Right. So I think that Trey Sermon should elevate to the 1A. Elijah Mitchell should be the 1B. And then Jamichael Hasty as a change of pace. And they both can play special teams. So, again,
is Mitchell another one that you're saying, hey, I got him. He's found money based on what he just did and based on this how the depth chart looks. But is your mentality, no one's going to pay me what the, having a guy in the top two rotation of a 49er offense and run game, no one's really going to pay up for that right now based on a one game sample size. Let's see what happens with Trey Sermon. Lots of moving pieces here. And he didn't really have the pedigree later day three that someone's probably instantly going to pay up for.
Exactly. Dynasty fantasy football is both long-term and short-term. And guys like Elijah Mitchell are not, I don't think they're long-term guys, but yet they're valuable in the short term. So if you got them because you got them in round four of a rookie draft or you picked them up off waivers for cheap, I wouldn't spend a lot of waiver wire bucks in Dynasty. If you were in redraft, maybe, but even still, I think that Trey Sermon's going to be the 1A now with Mostert out. And Mitchell is good, but I don't think that he's anything more than just a filler. So long-term, he's not a Dynasty play. So you got to just look at him like a Rodney Dangerfield. You're not going to get more for him than what he's worth to your roster. You might as well keep him.
Okay. Let's talk about the Rams. What a showing for them in week one. One question I would have is, you know, where's the value? What was clarified? What did you see in week one from this electric offense and our first data point with Mr. Matthew Stafford paired with Sean McVay?
No, I knew this was going to be a good pairing. I also, with the defense, I mean, this is a hell of an offense. And I said that in my redraft, you want the Rams players, period. Not the running backs so much, but the wide receivers for sure and the tight ends, because they're going to produce. And Matt Stafford is unleashed. He's a heck of a talent. He's somebody that can sling the ball all around the field. He's got the veteran plus the arm. Him and Cooper Kupp, they have breakfast every morning. They run a lot of pass routes. It's like, why didn't I know that he was having omelets with Matt Stafford? Like, this is inside information.
Exactly.
It's, right. But I think that Bobby Trees will have his moments too. It was just not a Bobby Trees game script. Bobby Woods, Robert Woods. But no, I mean, I think that they're both going to get theirs. And I love Van Jefferson with Matt Stafford. And they're all going to eat. They're all going to eat. And Tyler Higbee, I mean, is it Tyler? Yeah, Tyler Higbee. They're all going to eat. They're all going to get the chance.
It was great to see, though, that throw across the field, because I'm sure there's so many things in McVay's offense that he felt limited, that I don't know if Goff is going to A, pull the trigger, B, does he have the arm to pull this off? Stafford has pretty much a limitless portfolio of throws that he can make. On platform, off platform. I mean, it just seemed like a perfect fit. And we got one data point, obviously, and the Bears, you know, rather toothless. So we'll see. You know, I thought their defense would have a better showing. But again, this might be Bears defense is just fine. The Rams offense is maybe the biggest takeaway when we get a few weeks removed from this. I was going to ask, because Sony Michel just got there, do you think that this is going to turn into a big committee? Is it going to be close to 50-50? Or is it Henderson's job to lose and Michelle would be one that benefits from any missteps?
I think it's Henderson's job to lose, but I think they're going to work Sony Michel in to give him as much relief as they can. That being said, this offense is gold, because also their defense is gold. Their defense is going to put them in good position. If you only have to go 40 yards to get a touchdown, look at Jameis Winston this weekend with the Saints. He had 5 touchdowns. He only had 193 yards total passing because he didn't have to go very far. But that's what the Rams defense is going to do for Matt Stafford. They're going to put him in great field position, and Matt Stafford will respond. The whole offense will respond. It's just a matter of who's going to be elevated game to game, but it doesn't matter. I want all of the Rams offense, please.
Yeah. And in some shallow leagues, you know, I saw an FFPC, Sony Michel's out there a few times. I would clean that up. You want parts of this. And you mentioned Van Jefferson, like he's relatively available in some of these more shallow formats. I would notate still one limitation that we saw last year, and I think we're seeing it. We saw it week one. I think we're going to see it again, you know, as the season progresses, which is it's just not a high passing game for the running back. So just know they have good targets at wide receiver and tight end, and we didn't even see all of them in this game. And yet the running back, it's going to largely rely. Now, Henderson had a touchdown, so life is good. He had one catch, and he was able to do some work with it. But he's not going to be a guy that you typically see 4 or 5 receptions. So it is going to be that setting. You're going to need the touchdown to get into the double digits a lot of times. So just know that, whether it's Henderson, Michelle, whatever given week it is. Moving over to the Saints, you mentioned Jameis Winston. You mentioned the defense helping out the offense. So many question marks we had coming into this with no Michael Thomas. What was Marquez Callaway? What was he going to do with the wide receiver one role? We had Juwan Johnson coming out with 2 touchdowns. You had Tony Jones in the new Latavius Murray. And you also had the debut of Jameis Winston. What are some of the takeaways of is this real? Is this false going forward with the Saints offense?
I think that Jameis Winston is real. I think that the amount of time that he spent off able to work on his own skill set, the LASIK surgery, everything. You know, you get hungry. Sometimes you get complacent as an NFL quarterback or any kind of, you're already at the top. Everybody loves you. Why do I have to work? And then he loses his job, and now all of a sudden he has to work. And I think I got a ton of Jameis Winston because he was so cheap. And I really still believed, I really believed in his skill set that he would come around. And he's the kind of guy that can change the game. Again, 5 touchdowns and only less than 200 yards. And the yardage, I think, will come up as his skill receivers and skill positions come up with him. Alvin Kamara is a beast. And I love Tony Jones in that backfield as well. And then Marquez Callaway had the weakest game, but yet he still has a lot of potential. He's the kind of guy you just gotta know that he's going to have great games and bad games. And this was a bad game for him. But they also have 8 guys that are on COVID. 6 of them are coaches. 1 of them is a player and 1 of them is something else, whatever. So that could play a role. We got to be cognizant of that. But I think I think Jameis Winston on the whole and the Saints are on an uptick. I think a lot of garbage time, a lot of, you know, come back, play from behind, gunslinger type mentality. Jameis Winston is all in. I'm all in on Jameis Winston.
Yeah, I think one of the bigger things for me is I always look at there's certain players that rededicated themselves. And like you said, the time away. But what I saw is a guy that trimmed down. He looks in the best shape he's been in maybe since his freshman year in college. Like, he looks trim. He looks fit. I saw a guy that he used to be almost circus-like when he would move around in the pocket, try to evade guys. He was effective. But it was always interesting because he was very slow in how he did it. He would extend a play and it would take 9 seconds. And then he would end up running for 6 yards. I saw a guy that actually moved with a purpose in this game. I like what you said about just being away. The Ryan Tannehill effect. All of a sudden, I'm not the starter. That could be Marcus Mariota. That could be a number of guys that Cam Newton, you know, you take away their gig. And now what do I have? Well, I got to fight for it all over again. And the last time they fought for it might have been when they were in college, becoming a strong prospect. Might have been the last time that they really had to, quote unquote, earn it. Not that they weren't good enough to have it no matter what. But with Winston, I just feel kind of like you that Sean Payton is going to, whatever the best is for Winston, he still may be a guy that throws, you know, and averages an interception a game. But he's not going to be 2 interceptions a game. So can he just be good enough with the decision making? And I think especially this time without Michael Thomas and without Trequan Smith, with the wide receivers being limited, if we can see ball control within himself, I'm going to make the right decision. I'm going to run a little bit if I have to. I'm going to throw the ball away. If we see good decisions out of him during this stretch where the weapons are suboptimal or not full strength, I think that's all we need to know, because this would be the time you would force the ball. Because you say, no one's open. No, it's like that Peyton Manning commercial that where, remember, he throws it into the, you know, the 10-year-old's backs because no one's open. Yeah. Like, that would be Winston, you know, trying to force the ball, trying to make something. We saw that for years in Tampa Bay, and he had decent weapons. So if they've reined him in and playing within himself, knowing that the defense can do some of the work, knowing you'll have Michael Thomas hopefully back in a couple months, knowing that Trequan Smith can be back, but don't force the ball. You know, he found Deontay Harris for a long game. You know, he found Chris Hogan for a touchdown. He found Juwan Johnson a couple times. So can he just pick his moments? Because he doesn't need to throw 5 touchdowns. Can you throw 1 or 2? Can you control the game? Not throw the pick. Run for a first down every now and again. So he was one that I still had in one quarterback. I remember in one quarterback thinking last year, God, why am I holding Winston? You know, like, is he going to be a starter the next year? It was very ambiguous. But you hold 101s. I mean, this is what you do. You hold a guy that has actually done something in the NFL, saying the NFL will probably value that. And if they don't, then we know everything we need to know. If the Saints just willy-nilly moved on and Winston didn't get a gig, and he has to, you know, fight for scraps again and signs a 1-year deal, and he's a backup to somebody, you know, he goes to the Jets. He's the backup 1-year deal to Zach Wilson, and Sean Payton bailed on you. We probably wouldn't have as many shares as we do today. So the fact that he was a good soldier, you know, he went through, he learned a ton, goes through the offseason, dedicates himself, this debut, it's all aligning to say this is the second, the new Tannehill in terms of a new part, a fresh start of his career. And I had concern about Callaway. We'll see how these data set builds, but he's being thrust into a spot of like, hey, ooh, he looks good. You know, look at this. He's going to be the guy. At wide receiver, I am so skeptical of this whole like, the next man up will just be fine. Like, if you get the number one corner on a team, I mean, look at who for years, Julio Jones, who does he draw every single week for Atlanta? Or you can get these guys that are absolute alphas. They have, I mean, you might say every once in a while, they got a guy that they can truly exploit, but they got the big time matchup every week. And maybe Callaway doesn't even draw that. You know, maybe they just play straight up left and right sides or something. But the point is, being thrust from basically not producing much at all a year ago to now, like, he's looking at the other side and saying, I got Chris Hogan. This guy wasn't even on a team, you know, a few weeks ago. I got Deontay Harris, who's a bit player. I mean, let's keep it in perspective for what he is. Trequan Smith will be back at some point. Michael Thomas will be back. But he's got no help. So that's what I worry about with Callaway, is the, like, whether or not he's good. It's the fact that you're being thrust into a, like, level 11 right away. Week one, full on NFL defenses, and there's no one around you to suck away the safety and the top corner. That's what that's my biggest concern with this. But anyway, your thoughts on Callaway a little bit.
No, absolutely. A guy like Callaway, who has some talent and chemistry with Jameis Winston in the preseason, don't think for a second that the other team's defenses aren't picking up on that. And if Michael Thomas is out and Trequan Smith is out, Marquez Callaway is now your number one. Who do you think that defenses are going to focus on? They're going to focus on him. And that's why Juwan Johnson and all these no names just all of a sudden elevated, because Jameis Winston can pass the ball around to who's open. He's a talented number one guy. You know, you look at a guy like Josh Rosen, who didn't ever really get the chance, but he never has excelled. He hasn't ever shown that he's the number one dude that was taken. And yet Jameis Winston has. And that's why I believe in the talent, even though he may not have the best wide receivers around. But with a guy like Marquez Callaway, he's going to be double teamed, or maybe not even double teamed, but the best cornerback, the best safety from the other guy's team, they're going to have him blanketed.
And this is not like, I was actually thinking of a situation where like AJ Brown, for example, he came in and right away, he wasn't considered the guy for Tennessee. It was probably Corey Davis taking that attention away. So a lot of times at wide receiver, you start out lower than, you know, just all of a sudden, you know, your first day of significant action, it's like, boom, that's it. You know, top coverage, and we're going to lock you down. That's not the way it works. You know, you typically start out something in the ancillary or secondary space, and then you turn into the number one, and you turn into the focal point of the offense and the attention around you. And I do want to notate that Adam Trautman, I know he didn't have a great game. He led the team with 6 targets. Jameis Winston, I remember Cameron Brate having a ton of seasons, a ton of production, that Winston loves tight ends. And between Juwan Johnson and Adam Trautman, they saw a hearty number of targets because they didn't throw a whole lot. So just keep that in mind, that you say Kamara, the two tight ends, it may not be a wide receiver centric offense outside of certain situations, like, you know, a certain target here, a deep throw, you know, that it's not going to be, don't expect 15 targets going to wide receivers. They just don't have the horses to really support that right now, because a lot of times it's obvious. Just look at the team and say, where are the most talented players, or where are the mismatches? And it's not always, well, it's the first 3 wide receivers, and then maybe there's a tight end, and then maybe there's a running back. Some teams, it's more running back and tight end than wide receiver for moments in time. For Washington, just do you have a quick data point on on Washington, where we got Ryan Fitzpatrick barely played a couple drives. He's out now for a couple months. We'll see about maybe it being longer. Taylor Heinicke is next man up. Get Antonio Gibson, who actually is trending towards fine. He has a shoulder issue, but he was a full participant today, and they have a Thursday game, so that should be a non-factor. And again, with Heinicke in there, what were some of the points from week one that we should be taking away?
Yeah, so in my Scott Fishbowl bid, I ended up losing by half a point to a team that had one quarterback. I started two quarterbacks that had one quarterback, and it was Matt Ryan. I think he scored 1.78 points. But I had Ryan Fitzpatrick, who scored negative 1.78 points. I should have started Carson Wentz, but you don't know, because Carson Wentz was had his own question marks. The whole point is I lost by half a freaking point. That's fantasy football, dude. Like, you can think that you know, but when it comes to Washington football team, I don't know that they're going to sign any big names. Like, Cam Newton's out there, but they've already signed somebody else. They're not going to pick up Cam Newton. So it's Taylor Heinicke. And the fact, what I love is when you're watching SportsCenter and you're watching it from a bar where they've got the closed captioning, and Heinicke autocorrects to Heineken. It's like, okay, I'm at a bar. That makes sense. Let me have all the Heinekens. But it does. I think Heinicke is decent. But I think it just, like, I really like Ryan Fitzpatrick in that he's just a balls to the wall, throw the ball deep. Like, he can unleash guys. I was disappointed he got hurt early, not just from a scoring perspective, but just because I think that Washington football team, their offense was much better with him than with Heinicke.
Yeah, and I want to remind folks, if you're thinking of bidding big on Taylor Heinicke and Superflex, is he has been one that I think the line is he's never finished a game that he's started or he gets hurt. He is not a big build. He runs around. He does elude guys, but it's usually a flash in the pan and a flickering candle that is usually blown out and extinguished. So I actually think the savvy play is to pick up Kyle Allen, you know, in Superflex or two quarterback, because the odds that Heinicke stays healthy for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games where you're like, oh, I got Allen here and he's just not getting a shot. They like Kyle Allen. They like him too. So they like all these guys. And I just think Heinicke is going to be one that, yeah, he may have a great game. It's possible. It absolutely is. But I just don't think it's going to last very long. And I think if you have to pay 50% of your budget, 30% of your budget, significant something, you know, for Heinicke, you might be able to get Allen for a dollar. So just keep that in mind. I'm always about arbitrage opportunities there. And we're to final thoughts. I did want to give an update, first update for the UTH Best Ball Contest, where we got the super fans in there. We got Katie, Tim, Jordan, and myself. And one of our own. We got Jordan McNamara taking it down week one with the perfect storm outcome. He had Brady. He had Stafford. Mark Ingram, you know, that's going to turn out to be a running back one revelation in terms of the opportunities he at least had with their positive game script this week. He's got Swift and Jamal Williams, so that turned out well. Tyson Williams, I believe I adjusted his salary, some of these other ones that froze weeks ago. You know, he turned into a free square basically, but Tyson Williams, nice quality showing in week one. If you're not surprised that Jordan at all has Corey Davis or Tyler Lockett, he's big fans of those guys. He has Gronk, who had a career. I mean, what year was this? 90 yards, couple touchdowns. I thought he saved that for Super Bowls. So, big game for him. And he even had a couple other quarterbacks on his bench. And we'll see what happens with Cordarrelle Patterson, you know, with that wide receiver eligibility, but some running back usage out of him. So, Katie, what are some of your final thoughts and shout outs for this week?
All right. So, I do not normally trash talk. It takes a lot to get me to do so. I'm in a charity league and it's for the veterans, which I think is fantastic. It ends up, I was asked to take over an orphan for somebody that wasn't drafting. I had 2 picks left, I think, maybe 3 picks left when I joined. And I joined happily. It's like I join any charity league that it comes to. But the dude was like bragging that he was going to trash me week one. And so I, in chat, I gave him a rap and I dropped it like 3 weeks ago. It's like, look, dude, you think your team is all that and blah, blah, blah. So he was running his mouth the whole time. And so week one, I beat him. And it's the kind of thing where it's like, all right, so I don't normally bite, but I bit back. So here is the rap that I put in my chat, and I just wanted to share it with everybody. His name is Jeezy. It's like, you like to run your mouth, didn't figure you'd run into a slayer from the south. You bragged you beat me soundly, didn't you? But I told you you didn't know what you were getting into. I even started OBJ and forgot to sub him out. But Russell Gage's goose egg got me to jump and shout. I lost ETN to injury and I had to get a game saver. Y'all laughed at me when you saw how much I spent on waiver. But I got my man Tyson and maybe it's a one game win. But to lose to you week one after your trash talk would have been a sin. You laughed at the team I didn't draft and thought my faith in Winston starting was daft. But he put up more points combined than your two QBs. And if I lose from here, I really do not mind. This league's all for fun and it's all for charity. But me beating you has brought some clarity. Good luck moving forward. And I really do mean it because the ass kicking you promised was returned and you done seen it. So that's for Jeezy. And I just definitely love that we do a lot for charity in the fantasy football community. And, you know, again, it's all for fun. It's all for charity. I don't trash talk, but I wrote that rap and I just figured I'd share it.
Excellent stuff, Katie. And you can find her on Twitter at FF_Skylar399. I am at Chad Parsons NFL. Got Tim Torch over there. We're doing the waiver show on patreon.com/UTH. Reminder about all the content. I do a what I watch this week for college football. Try to get, we'll probably do a Devy show here or there with Katie. We'll catch up during the college season. Maybe we'll do a few minutes on a weekly show as well, talking about a few players. But certainly a lot of premium content. I mentioned the UTH Film Notes show. I do plenty of other content, do a trade cast as well. So find that out. And on Monday, you're going to get the trade calculator, you're going to get the rankings, the running back matrix, all those things updated by the time you're really checking things out on Monday, or especially by the time Tuesday you're seeing, did I win or lose? It's time for waivers, time to reset for the week and what I should be doing with my dynasty teams. So enjoy the games again this week. Let's hope we get a bunch more primetime games to look like we had the Ravens and Raiders in week one. And just know we're going to be there with you every step of the way, adapting to the changing landscape in front of us, because no two NFL weeks are the same. The moment you think you got it figured out, it's going to be five more twists and turns, and that Rubik's Cube needs to be turned on its head yet again. Until next week, never settle, refuse to be average, and keep building those dynasties.